me to remind you of the shock of Revelation 17, 18, if I may bother you with that this early in the morning. It's kind of hard to swallow if you're trying to swallow this with your coffee. I suppose the coffee helps. It doesn't help me. It just makes me more anxious. But I'm at peace about these things. It helps that they're not happening yet and that I'm looking at them from the comfort of my desk. And there you are, sitting there having your coffee. But these things are on the cusp of occurring in our day. I'm quoting now from verse 18 of the unveiling, chapter 17. And the woman whom you perceived is the great city. We know that to be Babylon. Here's the shocking part of that statement. Which has a kingdom over the kings of the earth. Babylon has a kingdom over the kings. How do you get a kingdom over kings? You have influence. What moves kings? That's easy. Money. Money rules everything. And it's no accident that money is being concentrated. Wealth is coming to a small group of people who pull the strings and control things on the earth. And governments are beholden to those who hold the money. And the kings of the governments of the various nations are beholden to those who hold the money. And in this case, those holding the money are Israelites, i.e. Jews. And they will be headquartered in Babylon. Now, there's something remarkable about the secret of Babylon and John's reaction. This is important that we have to look at John's reaction. John did not admire this image that he saw of the woman riding the wild beast. In fact, he marveled at it. It seemed to him to be unbelievable. And this is how we figure out what it is. We have to be just as shocked as John is when he's looking at this thing. So if we find ourselves in sympathy with his reaction or his mood, then we'll be in possession, I believe, of the truth. Now, in the previous section, which is the throne section, the political deliverance of the earth, we have the same characters. We have a wild beast and we have a woman. The thing is, back then, is that there was enmity between the wild beast and the woman, because we were looking at the faithful in Israel as the faithful woman, and there was enmity there because the woman represents the faithful remnant. And as is the case throughout history, the faithful remnant of Israel is always persecuted. She's a victim of the world's political and religious powers. But the religious powers in this day are combining under the figure of the wild beast. We're looking at the federated faiths of the world. And this is not now just Christianity or Hinduism, Buddhism, Islam. It is one big giant monster combining all of these religions. And I remind you that in the vision of Daniel, chapter 7, the beasts he described there are contemporaneous. They all exist at the same time. Whereas, in Daniel chapter 2, the political kingdoms of the world, Babylonian, Medo-Persian, Grecian Empire, they were successive. One came, was deposed, another came, it was deposed. In fact, by the time Daniel gets this, the vision of the beasts in chapter 7, Nebuchadnezzar has passed into history. And he's now dealing with He's now dealing with Belshazzar. So there's the key to know there is that these kingdoms come and go in Daniel chapter 2, but the beasts exist at the same time because one beast must stamp on the other three. Therefore, they exist contemporaneously. This is important to realize because this is one giant, lifeless cult of demonic religions. Good time to remind you, Christianity is a demonic religion. Buddhism is a demonic religion. Hinduism is a demonic religion. And Islam is a demonic religion. All religions are demonic. Well, I'll put an exception there, Judaism, if you want to call that a religion. I prefer not to. I prefer to call it God's deal with Israel and all the accompanying ceremonies and procedures and laws. So before this chapter, the beast has tried to eliminate faithful Israel. And John doesn't marvel at that. He would have been experienced with it, because the mainstream religion of his day persecuted the heck out of him. But shock of shocks, we're seeing something completely different here. Here is a woman and the wild beast again, same players, but this time there is no enmity. In fact, the beast and the woman are on the best of terms. They're friendly. They're sitting at the same table together. They're eating together. You know how horrific it was for a Jew to eat with a man or woman of the nations, let alone a woman. Women were somewhat to be considered second-class citizens. In fact, it's even worse than that. The wild beast supports the woman. The woman rides the wild beast. Not exactly a scene of persecution, is it? So John's thinking in his head, are you kidding me? Israel is going to be in league, in close association, much as a man and a prostitute, with the enemies of Jehovah. And she is going to be the recipient of the favors of the wild beast. And while she's doing this, she's not smitten by the wrath of God. And this would have to have shocked John too, because he's used to, you break the law, you die. Somebody throws big rocks at you. But here, God is silent, just as he was when the Lord was crucified. He seems to be silent. No vindication, no taking out vengeance on his enemies. So Israel at this time is not smitten by God's wrath, but actually seems to enjoy the favors which she really, because of her training, ought to forfeit. She ought to be forfeiting all the favors. No, I refuse the favors of the world because I'm not supposed to associate with you. But instead of that, she's enjoying it, luxuriating it, and she's drunk with it, and she tries to make everybody else drunk with it. So instead of losing the right to rule the nations, which at this time she should be disqualified to rule the nations because of her association with the beast system running the world. Instead of that, she seems to have put the beast systems in subjection to her and under tribute to her without the assistance of Jehovah. That's the whole key to this. Babylon and the wild beast, without the assistance, the blessing of Jehovah. Because she's going to do it without Jehovah. She doesn't need Jehovah because she's tired of waiting for him. The arrival of Christ in humiliation was a major blow to the psyche of this people. They were ready for a political savior. Here came the widow Wambkin. Here come the widow baby and a widow manger and Bethlehem, and then he moved to, of all places, Nazareth. This was unacceptable. And so it was never going to work. It was doomed from the beginning for a people who look for worldly power. But this is the problem with Israel. It's true that they are going to wield worldly power. So the problem is, it's in their DNA. They want to rule stuff. They want to own stuff. They want to lord it over other people because that's their destiny. However, instead of, well, look at Jesus Christ. What's his destiny? To be the king of not only the earth, but the universe. But what does he do? He comes as a humble man. He comes washing the feet of the disciples. He comes as a servant, and he's vexed on all sides. He's very patient. He heals people. He gives them food, and that's, he thinks of other people other than himself. Love your associate as you love yourself. That was embodied in our Lord Jesus Christ. This isn't the case with Israel, because she hasn't learned that lesson of humility. And all through her history, God is trying to bang this into her by having her taken into captivity. And it works for a while. Let's go into Babylon for a while. See how that works for you. You have to submit, put your neck under the yoke of a foreign power. That was disgusting to Israel. But she is learning. This is the only reason there is a remnant, ladies and gentlemen. I've been writing about the remnant in my newsletter, but the only reason there is a remnant in Israel is because some have submitted themselves to the disciplines of God. That's a lesson for us too. Because our Father knows what's best for us. Those Israelites who trust that concept, if I can call it that, become the remnant. They become the faithful, but most of them won't put up with it. So this is what astonished John, and this is the secret of Babylon and the wild beast. Here it is. It lies in the revelation of the apostate people. It lies in the relationship of the apostate people to the godless religion of the end times. And the godless religion of the end times is the wild beast. It has the same amount of heads and horns, 7 heads, 10 horns. Again, for your entertainment purposes, go back to Daniel chapter 7. Count the heads and the horns of the 4 beasts. One beast has 3 heads, one beast has 1 head, the horns. Anyway, count them up. The lioness, the she-bear, the leopardess, and the monstrous. And you will find that the beast of Revelation has the same amount of heads and horns. The one beast of Revelation has the same amount of heads and horns as the 4 wild beasts of Daniel chapter 7. That's because the 4 religions have joint power. And the only legitimate operation of God with ceremonies and laws is Judaism, as begun by Jehovah. This has become just another religion at the end times, and it is actually controlling the other religions with money. So suffering carries great reward in this era. But instead of suffering like good saints should, these most supreme sinners of the modern era, the era of the nations, at this time, namely apostate Jews, they seem to be receiving every token of divine approval. This is the trick today. We think that if things go well for you, then you must be, you are in the favor of God. His golden vision is upon you, and you have the Midas touch. And people today that have the Midas touch, the prosperity preachers, they all have millions of dollars. Your Joel Osteens, your Joyce Myers, these people, while they seem to receive every token of divine approval, actually, they are getting ahead of God. God is going to bless us with every good thing. But the modern prosperity preachers and many Christians today who think that the favor of God rests in their house, in their car, in their 2-car garage or 3- or 4-car garage, they look at this. Even those who are not overtly in the prosperity crap, they look at all the good things they have as a prosperity, as the seal of approval of God. And God does give us good things, but don't try to marry the things that you have with God's favor, because it's not necessarily so. Many times it's not. All I have to do is point you to Paul, who spent a day and a night in the swamp, suffered, an itinerant traveler in dangers, beaten. Look at him. Okay, and yet he was God's man of the day. Look at Jesus Christ. Look at any of the prophets. You will find people who are despised, who walk around in sackcloth and ashes, discouraged, depressed, sitting at the bottom of wells, and yet these are God's people. Israel has not learned this lesson. certainly she hasn't learned it here in the unveiling chapter 17. And in 18, we're going to see the destruction of Babylon. But first, the rise of Babylon.